Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Ian Pickus. Earlier this week, Governor Andrew Cuomo was sworn in for a third term at Ellis Island. It comes after a rocky 2018. The Democrat beat back a primary challenge and saw close allies convicted at corruption trials. But he also cruised to re-election in November and has since promised the most progressive legislative session in memory. A new documentary about Andrew Cuomo airs tonight at 7:30 on WMHT Public Television.
I can't believe what's happened to New York's government. The dysfunction, the corruption, the embarrassment. It is hurting all of us. We need to clean up Albany now.
I, Andrew M. Cuomo,
do solemnly swear.
Governor Andrew Cuomo, the first two terms, was put together by New York Now managing editor Matt Ryan, who joins us now.
Ian, great to see you again.
Last time we were sitting here, we were talking about Mario Cuomo.
Like father, like son.
What got you interested in the first two terms of Andrew the son?
I think mainly it's because we have such a deep archive, especially of the last 8 years. I thought it would be kind of a shame not to do this. We just have so much great material all the way back from, you know, the passage of same-sex marriage and the property tax cap in 2011 up until, you know, now here with defeating Cynthia Nixon and Mark Molinaro. I just thought we kind of owed it to ourselves and to our viewers, you know, to kind of look back before we look forward.
Where do you think the governor is today as he starts the third term based on looking back through the footage of the first 8 years?
Well, this year in particular, forget the term, is just going to be really fascinating because for the first time, he's got a Democratic Senate to go along with that Democratic Assembly. And of course, so many of the storylines that you've heard on WAMC from Karen DeWitt and others is the fact that a lot of the progressive legislation that you heard proposed in the state of the state, hey, it sounds great, never went anywhere because of the Senate-controlled, the GOP control in the Senate. There's no more excuses for that now, right? And so I'm really curious to see if all of the Democrats can work together nicely to pass some of these pieces of legislation they've talked about for years, like codifying Roe v. Wade into the state constitution, voting reforms, perhaps more stricter gun control measures. That's what I'm looking forward to the most. And I guess I'm most interested in seeing what's the signature legislation, what's going to be the very first thing they pass. I guess that would be a good poll questioner. You want to have a little friendly wager with someone.
Let's go back now and talk about how it got started. He was elected attorney general the same year as Eliot Spitzer, who had a very brief run as governor, paving the way for David Paterson, who was not able to run for election on his own. So Governor Cuomo comes in, wins overwhelmingly. And your movie makes the point that early on, he sort of embraced a more conservative fiscal approach to try to win over Republicans in New York.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, even Jimmy Vielkind of the Wall Street Journal, a local native here, you know, I think correctly called him a fiscal centrist. You know, he made both parties, particularly in 2011, happy. He got the property tax cap, which Republicans had talked about for years and years. E.J. McMahon of the Empire Center, a conservative think tank, called it his greatest accomplishment of his 8 years. He adds that he would like to see it become permanent. But that really satisfied a lot of the people on the right. He passed that first budget with no new taxes, you know, got rid of a $10 billion deficit. And so he talked about bringing competence and functionality back to Albany, and he certainly did that. And he also made the left very happy with obviously the number one being same-sex marriage. And, you know, what a storyline that one as we kind of watch that weave its way through to the Senate floor from May all the way down to June. Remember, there was talk, you know, who were going to be those Senate Republicans because he needed three, ended up getting four.
Four, yeah.
That fourth one, someone in your listening area down from Dutchess County, Steve Saland, longtime state senator, was the one who pushed it over the goal line, if you will. So, you know, in that first term, especially, he got off to that good start because he had both sides of the aisle pretty happy with him.
And the movie goes on to cover some of the downsides as well. Governor Cuomo had this long, protracted fight with the environmentalists over the issue of hydrofracking before eventually his administration ruled that it would not go forward in New York. So take us through sort of, that end of the first term era, the first reelection.
Yeah, our buddy John Campbell from the USA Today Network does a good job kind of explaining how that hydrofracking story really started from, you know, David Patterson's tenure all the way up until that final decision in 2014. John, who had followed that story as close as anyone, he didn't even know what was going to happen the day of. There was this cabinet meeting where they finally announced, you know, that the decision was no. So they kept that a great secret. And, you know, he got reelected easily in 2014. He faced a primary, which was brought a lot of news here to Albany. Zephyr Teachout, a complete unknown, got 34% of the vote. And then he ended up cruising over Rob Astorino, who really tried to make some of the negative news surrounding the governor, the Moreland Commission, among other things, to stick. But I don't know if people just weren't paying attention or they just really weren't interested. But I guess they thought enough of the governor in those 4 years to give him four more.
And having just come out of an election recently now, it's interesting to note that in the Capital Region counties, the areas around Albany, both in the primary and then in the general, Governor Cuomo does not do as well as he does largely in downstate and other sort of city areas in New York.
Isn't that funny? You know, you would think just the opposite, of course. In fact, Lou Lehrman, the GOP nominee in 1982, against Mario Cuomo, talked about how Albany was, you know, government owned. But yeah, it's interesting how that has changed. I guess, you know, some people, listen, you stick in office long enough, people are going to get sick of you, especially if they're seeing you on the news every single night, which pretty much happens where we live in Albany.
So let's talk about this past summer. There was a primary. Cynthia Nixon mounts a challenge to his left, trying to play up this idea that Governor Cuomo's office was corrupt. And she ultimately did not make much of a dent in the primary. Why do you think that is?
It's a great question. She essentially finished the exact same as Zephyr Teachout did in 2014. Zephyr Teachout, complete unknown. Cynthia Nixon, a very famous actress. One of the reasons is, and we document this, is that Cuomo took it seriously. He spent millions and millions of dollars defending his record, not so much mentioning Cynthia Nixon by name, but defending his record. And like, say, if you're a Yankees fan and you were watching the Yankees on Yes Network, you were inundated with ads about telling you how great Governor Cuomo was. So that was the difference in the primary from 2014, is that he took it really seriously and he ended up, you know, crushing her.
And yet, people who pay attention to this stuff, certainly the good government groups that we talk to, have said, you know, ethics reform hasn't come far enough. It's constantly mentioned. It's raised in the context of the Moreland Act Commission and disbanding that in exchange for what a lot of people thought was half a loaf. Do you think we'll see any new approach on ethics reform here in the new term?
My partner from the Times Union, Casey Seiler, and I joke about that a lot. We have literally asked that question many, many times at our reporters' roundtable, and some of the responses is, you know, are just like you said, a half a loaf, a half measure, is not really going as far as they should. I mean, if they didn't do anything after Skelos, the former GOP leader of the Senate, went down, after Sheldon Silver, the former leader of the Assembly, went down, these upstate bid-rigging scandals, Joe Percoco, what's it going to take? You know, as Jimmy Vielkind says in our documentary, they have done nothing. It, you know, if that doesn't spur them to action, what will? What may change this spring and this winter is a Democratic-controlled Senate. And they've talked about measures for ethics reform, and let's see if they really push them through, if they're really serious.
And we should note this pay raise commission, which has put the congressional limit on outside income, which has been seen as potentially a corrupting influence, eventually will go away. You wouldn't be able to make more than 15% of your salary in outside income. So the thinking goes, not really tested yet, that might cut down on outside influence on lawmakers.
Right. But then you have lawmakers, especially in the Democratic-controlled Assembly, who don't like the fact.
To Speaker Hastie.
Yeah, believe it or not, that they're getting this pay raise. They don't like it because they don't get these, what they call Lulus, this extra money for chairmanship of Committee X, Y, Z. And Assembly, this is getting inside baseball, but I think your listeners would probably appreciate that. But Assembly Speaker Carl Hastie seems to have more of an adversarial relationship now with Andrew Cuomo. We'll see if that continues into this session, but that could certainly change things.
I want to talk about Andrew Cuomo, the man. Now, when you made your documentary about Mario Cuomo, Andrew was interviewed for that. I don't think he's in this movie. It's archived clips. However, there seems to be a bit of a thaw with the press corps of late. We've noticed it at WAMC, I'll say.
That's right. A frequent guest now on the roundtable.
That's right.
Radio is definitely his favorite medium. We've learned that over the years, much to the chagrin of TV folks like me. He's never appeared on our show. He just doesn't do that, right? That's not his thing. But we'll see. I mean, like he's mentioned a few times, there are really no excuses anymore, right? I mean, he's got Democrats controlling everything in Albany. So let's see what he can accomplish under these very new circumstances.
Do you think he's competitive with his dad, you know, having spent the time you have researching both of their governorships?
I will give you the answer that I got from the people who have covered him the longest. And I'm talking going back to when he worked for a dollar for Mario Cuomo in the 80s. And they all give an emphatic yes. And a lot of people, if you remember back to 2011, argued that his first legislative session was better than anything that his father had accomplished in 12 years. And I think maybe to some folks off the record, he kind of nudged and winked his eye and said, yeah, I've already done better than Pop in that sense. But he's very competitive. But, you know, I think he's past all that now. He's got 8 years behind him now. I mean, he's got a legacy of his own. I don't think there's really a need to compare it to his father's anymore. For the next 4 years, I think we're going to be looking at a lot of legacy projects. You know, we think he's not going to run for president at this point. You've seen a lot of the infrastructure improvements, the Tappan Zee Bridge and new LaGuardia Airport, Moynihan train station in New York City. So I think that, in addition to some of the legislative things he wants to get done, I think that's something he's really going to concentrate on. And the state could use some good infrastructure and improvements to our infrastructure.
There's a question that sort of hangs over the footage I've seen from your film, which is it important for a governor, a politician, to be likable? And I guess the numbers show, you know, if he's going to win in the 60s every time he runs, he must be doing something right in the eyes of New York voters. On the other hand, I don't think anyone would, you know, say he's great as a retail politician,
right,
per se.
Well, and that's why a lot of people didn't think he was ever going to seriously run for president, because what do you have to do? You've got to excel at retail politics. You got to go to Ottumwa, Iowa, and Concord, New Hampshire, shake hands and go into the diners, kiss babies. That has never been his forte. So that's why I never really thought he would seriously run for president. But it's a great question. Do you need to have an executive who you really like, or do you want someone who gets things done and maybe is a little bit of a bully? We heard that word. I heard that word in just about every interview we conducted. We conducted around 15. A lot of people use it in a negative way. A lot of people kind of admire him for that. As one of our folks said, sometimes you got to push the legislators around to get them to act.
Well, let's talk now about Tish James. She holds the office that Governor Andrew Cuomo came from before becoming governor, attorney general after the downfall of Eric Schneiderman. What are your expectations for Tish James and what she brings to Albany?
Yeah, very interested in that. That's a good story that's not really getting a lot of attention right now. A lot of people were put off by the fact that Tish James seemed to be Andrew Cuomo's kind of handpicked choice for that AG role. We saw Zephyr Teachout, kind of a Hudson Valley resident, really give her a run. But in the end, she just could not overcome all the support that Tish James, the former New York City public advocate, had in the five boroughs. It's a great question. Are they too close? I'm sure you read a lot of editorials that said just that.
And my boss has asked the governor that too, and he says no.
Yeah, I guess she's got to show her independence, right? Give her some time here to prove that she is an independent AG. But that's a really good question. I'm looking forward. That's one of the storylines I'll be looking at here in the first 6 months.
Here's the real last thing.
There we go.
How did the gifts on Twitter start? You guys are sort of famous for these reaction shots of state politicians that I think are great for a very select audience.
Yeah, very, very, very select few inside baseball. I would say, I guess I just saw online, you know, Chris Saliza, the former Washington Post writer, now works for CNN. He really kind of had a market of them, but they were all national ones. I'm like, let's localize it a little bit, be a little more parochial, get some Andrew Cuomo gifts and some other ones. The people in Albany, the capital, they really seem to like it, so We'll keep doing them.
That's what Twitter's for anyway.
Exactly.
You can catch the new documentary, Governor Andrew Cuomo, The First Two Terms, tonight at 7:30 on WMHT Public Television. And it'll live online after that, right?
NYNow.org, yes.
Matt Ryan, thanks for seeing us again.
Thanks, Ian.
And you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.